Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we'll tell you who's filed to run so far for city council and mayoral races in East County. Then on our Capitol Report, hear an update on the 50th congressional race, where a new poll shows Democrat Amar Caponajar just 1 point behind Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter among voters who've read their ballot statements. Hear about a possible strike by Rite Aid pharmacy workers and about proposed bailout bills for utility companies in California. Then on Tribal Beat, we'll have news about groundbreaking for more road improvements in Jamul. On Green Scene, hear why Boulevard planners are opposed to the Torrey Wind project in their community. We'll have rattlesnake safety tips for you in Santee and news about some county parks closed during August due to heat. Plus, hear about health care funding that's been restored by the Trump administration. On Destination East County, learn about top festivals and events coming up, including our very own East County Fest on August 25th at Mission Trails Regional Park, and you're all invited to our 10-year anniversary celebration for East County Magazine. On Crime Beat, authorities are looking for a man who backed over a woman in Spring Valley and fled the scene. Plus, hear about thieves who stole copper wires from a sports complex and a high school in Santee. We'll have tips on living with coyotes from the Director of County Animal Services, and on People Power, find out which local philanthropist just donated $5 million to Grossmont Hospital for a new cardiac facility. Hear about a fundraiser to help West Fire survivors in Alpine, and from Public News Service, we'll have national news headlines, including an update on the trial of Paul Manafort, efforts to gut California's clean car emissions laws, and the latest on the Dakota Access Pipeline battle. Then, find out how you can nominate a Veteran of the Year in El Cajon. And finally, Connie Beck, Master Gardener, will have tips on fall planting tools to get your garden ready for those autumn crops. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with a local government report. The filing deadline to run for local offices is Friday, August 10th. We checked with El Cajon, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and Santee City clerks to find out which seats are on the ballot and who has taken out papers declaring an intent to run for city council or mayor so far, as of our deadline for today's show. More candidates may yet file, and prospective candidates are not confirmed until they turn in signatures and meet verification requirements to qualify for the November election. Now, if you are interested in running for any of these offices, election officials advise starting early to get signatures from registered voters, since some city offices are closed on Fridays. So here are the candidates who have filed to run so far in city council and mayoral races in East County. These are officially nonpartisan offices, but some candidates tout their endorsements by political parties. So for those candidates, we have listed their affiliations. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells and Councilman Gary Kendrick are up for re-election this November, and both have taken out papers to run. Both are endorsed by the Republican Party. In addition, Joel Scalziti has pulled papers indicating he intends to run for mayor in El Cajon. Scalziti currently serves on the Helix Water District Board and was endorsed in his last election by the Republicans. Councilman Ben Colasso, embroiled in legal controversies, has been campaigning for mayor in El Cajon, but has not yet filed papers as of when we checked with the city clerk. He was endorsed by the Democratic Party in his 2016 council race, but the party has not yet announced any endorsements in El Cajon for this year. La Mesa Mayor Marco Rapostathis, Councilman Bill Baber, and Councilman Guy McWhirter have all taken out papers to run for re-election. Baber and McWhirter are endorsed by the Republican Party. In addition, Jose Fernandez has pulled paperwork to run for La Mesa mayor. He told us he's an immigrant who's lived in La Mesa since 1989. He does document procurement for an aerospace contractor and told our producer that he hopes to get the Republican Party endorsement. In addition, David Myers has pulled papers for both mayor and council races in La Mesa, but he must choose which, if either, to run for before that August 10th filing deadline. A commander in the San Diego Sheriff's Department, Myers ran for sheriff earlier this year when he was endorsed by the Democratic Party, but he was defeated by incumbent Sheriff Bill Gore in the June election. Dr. Akilah Weber and Daryl McDonald have both taken out papers to run for La Mesa City Council. Dr. Weber is a medical doctor. She's the daughter of Assemblywoman Shirley Weber and is endorsed by the Democratic Party. McDonald has served as a lifeguard for the city of San Diego, which once declared Daryl McDonald Day in honor of his long career saving lives. Lemon Grove Council members Jennifer Mendoza and Jerry Jones are both up for re-election in November. Mendoza has filed papers to run and is endorsed by the Democratic Party. Jones told East County Magazine in a recent email that he, too, plans to seek re-election, although he had not yet taken out papers as of this week. In addition, Nadia Susana Contreras has filed to run for a council seat. Her Facebook page indicates she is a lifelong Lemon Grove resident with a history of working for nonprofits on humanitarian causes. This will be Santee's first election with new district elections. There are three seats on the ballot. Councilmembers Rob McNellis and Ron Hall are thus far running unopposed in Districts 1 and 2. Both are endorsed by the Republican Party. District 3 is an open seat with four candidates who pulled papers to run so far: Daniel Bickford, Zach Giannino, Laura Koval, and Linda Marichal. Bickford is a Navy veteran, a retired technology installer, and an active community volunteer, according to a bio on his campaign's Facebook page. Koval is the director of Parks and Recreation for Santee Lakes Recreational Preserve, according to her LinkedIn page. Giannino is a 2017 alumni of UCSD, where he majored in political science, according to his Facebook page. Marichal is a retired orthopedic practice manager who told us she is running independently, with long and strong ties having been raised in Santee. After the Registrar of Voters confirms which candidates have qualified for the November ballot, we'll be reaching out to those candidates to provide our listeners with in-depth coverage on these important races. This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
Congressman Duncan D. Hunter may be facing the toughest challenge of his career. His Democratic opponent, Amar Campa-Najjar, has raised over $1 million, compared to the more than $848,000 raised by Hunter as of June 30th. Campa-Najjar has hired prominent national campaign strategist Joe Trippi, and a new poll shows the two candidates in the 50th Congressional District in a near-dead heat among likely voters who have provided ballot statements on both. Trippi will serve as media director and lead strategist. He has handled several successful congressional campaigns, including Democrat Doug Jones's recent upset victory in Deep Red, Alabama. Trippi is also known for his work on presidential campaigns for Democratic candidates, including Howard Dean, where he helped develop internet fundraising strategies for grassroots support, as well as California Governor Jerry Brown's successful race in 2010 when Brown was outspent 4-1 by Meg Whitman. Trippi says, "There's a clear hunger right now in the 50th Congressional District for voters for independent leadership. Amar can win this race. Just like we saw in Alabama with Doug Jones, voters want to end the divisiveness and chaos and start working together to get things done." The prominent national campaign strategist adds, "Congressman Duncan Hunter represents scandal and partisanship. Amar will bring integrity to Washington and work with everyone for common sense solutions." This week, the campaign announced that a new poll conducted by Tolchin Research found Campa-Najjar within single digits of Hunter in an initial horse race, and statistically tied after voters read their ballot statements. The poll was conducted by phone, wireless, and online between July 17th and July 23rd. Those polled in the district were 44% Republican, 29% Democrat, 21% no party preference, and 6% other. The poll found voters favored a generic Republican over a generic Democrat by just 5 points, 47 to 42%. After being shown ballot statements, Hunter's lead shifted to just 1 percentage point, 48 to 47%. The poll also found a majority of voters viewed Hunter negatively, and 55% said they want their representative in Congress to provide checks and balances against the Trump administration. Congressman Hunter is an Iraq and Afghanistan war veteran who fills the seat formerly held by his father, Duncan Hunter Sr. Hunter Jr. has run on a conservative platform touting a strong military defense, border security, and vocal support of President Donald Trump, whom Hunter called, quote, "the greatest president of my generation," in a speech on the House floor July 26th, in which Hunter called for his impeachment of Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein in relation to his investigation of Trump-Russia ties. Hunter called the department corrupt and claimed the investigation is, quote, "politically driven, despite dozens of indictments recently filed by special counsel Robert Mueller, including conspiracy charges against former Trump campaign chair Paul Manafort. Charges against a dozen Russians for covert actions to influence the 2016 presidential election, including hacking into election systems in several states, and charges against Trump's former national security director, among others. Congressman Hunter remains under investigation himself by the Justice Department for alleged misspending of campaign funds for personal use, including vacations, high-end jewelry, oral surgery bills, first-class airfare for his son's pet rabbit, and tuition at his children's school. He has denied wrongdoing, but repaid over $40,000 to his campaign. Kampa Najjar is a former Labor Department official in the Obama administration who says he's running to help working Americans. He says the recent poll shows voters are fed up with Hunter and are ready for what he calls, quote, real representation, adding, quote, voters want an independent leader who will stand up with women instead of question their qualifications, work across the aisle on health care, immigration, and infrastructure,
instead of standing up and challenging the administration
when it imposes tax policies that hurt California families, tariffs that hurt farmers, local manufacturers, and car dealers who rely on trade, not aid, to make an honest living. Many of Hunter's contributions are from lobbyists, notes Kampa Najjar, who concludes, quote, Hunter's record shows he's beholden to special interests, not our interests. According to campaign contribution records at Open Secrets, over 46% of Hunter's contributions have come from political action committees or PACs, while Kampa Najjar got less than 5% of his donation from PACs. Leadership PACs are the top donors to Hunter's campaign, followed by the defense industry, electronic industry, lobbyists, and the defense aerospace industry. By contrast, the top four sectors donating to Kampa Najjar's campaign are retirees, Democratic and liberal groups, educators, and health professionals. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
Union employees at Southern California Rite Aid pharmacies voted overwhelmingly this week to reject the company's contract offer and authorized United Food and Commercial Workers Union to call a strike if union leaders deem it necessary. A press release from UFCW Local 135 contends that the corporate proposal makes it almost impossible for employees to attain wage increases, eliminates wage protections for pharmacists, and, quote, strips retirees of health care benefits promised to them in their retirement, cruelly leaving them without coverage in their old age. The company's offer includes a wage increase of 75 cents for most workers, with no raise for those earning the top rate. But according to the union, Rite Aid applies unattainable conditions, which means that almost no employees will actually get a raise, and those few that do will be forced to pay more than 80% of that raise back to Rite Aid in the form of health care premiums. Further, if workers receive any minimum wage increases during the calendar year, or if they receive an increase based on seniority, the 75-cent raise does not apply to them either. The company's offer also strips health care from current and future employees and eliminates the current health plan and bans the union from any oversight of workers' benefits, the union contends, adding that seniors who work their whole careers for Rite Aid will lose health care benefits immediately when the contract goes into effect. Mickey Kasparian, president of UFCW Local 135, says, "Our Rite Aid members are strong and unified. They deserve to be treated with respect. We are committed to protect their health benefits, as well as ensuring they receive fair wage increases." Rite Aid Corporation is one of the nation's largest drugstore chains, with over 4,500 stores and annual revenue of nearly $33 billion last year. Rite Aid has advised its shareholders that it plans to quadruple its revenues through its planned merger with Albertsons. We reached out to Rite Aid for comments for this story, but they did not respond by the deadline for this show. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Fisteer.
Utilities are lobbying California state legislators to approve a pair of bills being pushed by Governor Jerry Brown in the wake of catastrophic firestorms in Northern California. that have been linked to utility-owned power lines and electrical equipment. Facing $10 billion in damages with only about $800,000 in insurance, PG&E has argued it could be pushed into bankruptcy without relief. But consumer advocates argue that the bills amount to a bailout for utilities at ratepayers' expense. The utilities want to change California's inverse condemnation laws, which hold utilities responsible for any fires caused by their lines. However, if a company is found to have safely operated its equipment, it can ask California Public Utilities Commission to approve charging ratepayers for its uninsured losses under current law. San Diego Gas and Electric tried that approach, but Public Utilities Commission refused to approve letting SDG&E charge ratepayers for its liabilities in the 2007 firestorms because the PUC found that SDG&E did not follow all required safety procedures. Now the big utility companies want to eliminate inverse condemnation in relation to wildfires, a proposal that has backcountry residents sounding the alarm. Under Governor Brown's plan, courts would have to determine if a utility acted reasonably and balance the harm caused by wildfires involving power lines against the public benefit of electric infrastructure. The changes would not apply to wildfires before this year. Diane Conklin, spokesperson for the Moosey Grade Road Alliance, a group of Ramona residents impacted by the 2003 and 2007 firestorms who have intervened in numerous wildfire-related proceedings, has sent a blistering letter on behalf of the organization to Governor Jerry Brown, Senate President Tony Atkins, and Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon, warning that provisions of amended Senate Bills 1088 and 901, quote, could gravely and substantially increase, rather than decrease, risk of catastrophic wildfires in California by eliminating the utility's financial stake in safe planning, construction, maintenance, and operation of their systems. Her letter urged lawmakers not to give a free pass to utilities or place new burdens on fire victims. Conklin warns that the proposed changes would also shift the burden of care for inspections from utility linemen to the PUC. She says the PUC does not have sufficient resources to inspect over 200,000 miles of power lines and millions of components, and adds that fines levied by the PUC against utilities have not provided enough incentives to boost safety. By contrast, SDG&E did take major steps to improve safety after the 2007 firestorms. Those safety improvements were incentivized in part by the company's shareholders, not ratepayers, having to pay for uninsured losses for damages from two of the 2007 firestorms, for which CAL FIRE found SDG&E equipment responsible, though SDG&E has long disputed that finding. Rex Frazier, president of the Personal Insurance Federation of California, has also taken a stand against the legislation, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. At a meeting this week by a legislative panel convened to consider the bills, he testified that
the legislation
could be unconstitutional. Instead, he concluded, quote, the focus should be on safety improvements and vegetation management. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat Report. The Hummel Indian Village has broken ground on road improvements at the intersection of Lions Valley Road and Campo Road. These improvements are part of the Hummel Indian Village's $3.7 million investment for improvements to roadways near the casino and intersections along Highway 94. The improvements are part of a commitment made with the county to fund these roadway upgrades with proceeds from the tribe's Hummel Casino. Hummel Indian Village Chairwoman Erica Pinto notes that for years, community members, tribal members, and county supervisors have all wanted improvements to make dangerous roads safer.
She says, Hummel Indian Village has been pleased to help support these roadway improvements because we know safer roads save lives, connect us to our loved ones, and improve our quality of life. While some residents opposed to a casino in the region have voiced concerns over the casino opening without all of the promised road improvements completed in advance, casino revenues were needed to fund those upgrades, the tribe has indicated. Today is a testament to our success, Chairwoman Pinto said at the groundbreaking. In the nearly 2 years that the casino has been open, we've been fortunate to be able to use the revenue to invest back in our community. That investment has included delivering 2 new state-of-the-art fire trucks to CAL FIRE that were put to good use during fire season last year, Pinto notes, adding that millions of dollars in funding for equipment, personnel, and training have also been provided by the tribe to improve emergency services for all residents in the community. The Lions Valley intersection improvements will include a new signal and safety enhancement measures for pedestrians, bicyclists, and motorists. Chairwoman Pinto concluded that while there is still work to be done, the groundbreaking shows that when we all work together with a common goal in mind, our community can achieve great things.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The Boulevard Community Planning Group has sent a 26-page letter to the county opposing Tara Glenn's proposed Torrey Wind Energy Project. If approved, the project would erect 30 wind turbines, each 586 feet tall, on absentee-owned ranch land at the north end of Ribbonwood Road. Each turbine would be 90 feet higher than the tallest skyscraper in downtown San Diego. The project would increase our region's portfolio of renewable energy projects that don't rely on fossil fuels. But at the July 12th meeting of Boulevard's planning group, when asked if anyone supported the project, no one raised their hand. Nearly everyone present was opposed. Planners and community members have previously raised objections over several other wind projects built and in the pipeline, citing the cumulative impacts on wildlife habitat, public health and safety, and quality of life. Fire is also a big concern, since a wind turbine at the Kumeyaay Wind Farm in Campo burst into flames in 2013, sparking a brush fire that threatened a nearby home and led the Campo tribe to cancel its proposed Shuluk Wind Project. Another wind turbine caught fire in Ocotillo. The turbines proposed by Torrey Wind would be 4.2 megawatts, far larger than even the massive wind turbines recently built at Tool Wind in McCain Valley. Neighbors near existing wind projects in our region have complained of noise and infrasound impacts on health, as well as flashing lights, distracting blade flicker, and visual blight. Donna Tisdale, chair of the Boulevard Planning Group, says that an environmental impact report should consider the cumulative effects of multiple projects on the region. On earlier wind projects, county supervisors essentially ignored serious concerns raised by Boulevard residents, approving massive wind and solar projects in the rural community over strenuous objections and documentation of risks provided by the area's rural residents. If you would like to submit public comments in this project, you can call 858-495-5516. That number again is 858-495-5516. Reporting for KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
Hot weather brings a timely warning from the Santee Fire Department. The agency posted a photo on Facebook of one of its firefighters removing a red diamondback rattlesnake from a backyard on aptly named Rattlesnake Mountain. Santee Fire Department's post says it's an all-hazards department, meaning snake wrangling is all part of the job, but this was one of the biggest snakes it's captured. The snake, held at arm's length via a snake hook tool, appeared longer than the height of the firefighter. That's over 6 feet. The department offers this advice to remember. Don't put your hands or feet where you can't see, and always look before stepping over doorsteps, since snakes like to crawl along the sides of buildings. If you do see a rattlesnake, freeze, then back up slowly to avoid frightening the reptile. If you are bitten, seek medical help immediately, since rattlesnake bites can be life-threatening without treatment, including anti-venom. Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is Jonathan Getz.
San Diego County's Parks and Recreation Department will close several parks for the month of August, a precaution taken each year due to the season's expected extreme heat. El Capitan Preserve near Lakeside, Mount Gower Preserve near Ramona, Hell Hole Canyon Preserve in Valley Center, and Wilderness Gardens in Pala are closed for the entire month of August. In addition, Agua Caliente Regional Park and Vallecito County Park in the Anza Borrego Desert are closed all summer. They will reopen Labor Day weekend. Luckily, there are nearly 100 other county parks and preserves to explore during the month of August, including several with splash pads to cool off and others offering movies in the park after dark. If you do go out for a hike, be smart and follow these tips. Let someone know where you will be and when you plan to return. Hike with others. Bring plenty of water. That means more than one bottle. If you hike with your dog, bring water for your pet, too. Leave your dog at home for difficult hikes or any time it's too hot. Take plenty of water to stay hydrated. One bottle is probably not enough. Wear lightweight, light-colored, ventilated clothing, sturdy shoes with traction for slippery rocks, sunscreen, a hat, and sunglasses. Take breaks in the shade if possible. Bring ample food, sunscreen to reapply, a flashlight, first aid kit, multipurpose tool or small knife, and a whistle. Choose trails that match your level of physical fitness. Take a map and a fully charged mobile phone plus GPS to summon help if needed. For more information on our county parks, visit sdparks.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
The Trump administration is restarting a part of the Affordable Care Act that it had slashed in July, much to the relief of insurers and healthcare advocacy groups, Public News Service reports. The feds announced last week that they will allow risk adjustment payments from 2017 to go through, after blocking them in early July. The program collects money from health plans that have mostly healthy patients and distributes it to health plans that take on older, sicker patients. Sean Greminger, Senior Director of Federal Relations with the nonprofit Families USA, says it is crucial to ensure access to health care for everyone. Quote, "It's critical that this was put in place and that it stays in place, because it really is the mechanism that allows health plans to provide coverage to people with pre-existing conditions," he states. Earlier this year, a judge in New Mexico questioned the fairness of the program's formulas and asked for clarification. Now, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services has released an interim final rule that rectifies the problems raised in that case. Greminger said he thinks the administration may have reversed course after taking some heat from both sides of the aisle. He says, quote, "Even Republicans on the Hill, I think, were very worried that going into the midterms in 2018, they would be faced with consumers who couldn't afford, couldn't find any health care plan. Democrats would have been able to blame the Trump administration had it not changed course," he adds. Greminger notes that if the risk adjustments are stopped in the future, many insurance companies would likely pull out of the Affordable Care Act marketplace. That would leave many counties without a single plan on the healthcare exchange. Plans that come with subsidies to make premiums more affordable. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes a kayak tour at Lake Morena, a jazz concert at Mission Trails, Hall & Oates, and Train in concert at SDSU, the Julian Natural Wonder Fest, the Heart of Mount Helix, and the Price is Right game show at Sequan.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including our own East County Fest at Mission Trails, celebrating the 10th anniversary of East County Magazine, as well as the Barona Powwow, Sequan Powwow, Ramona Grape Stomp, and the Julian Grape Stomp Festa.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
You're invited to take a kayak tour of Lake Morena in Campo on Saturday, August 4th. Kayaks will be provided for the tour, which will teach you about the history of the park, the dam, and the Native Americans who once inhabited the area. Bring sunscreen, a hat, a reusable water bottle, and binoculars. Reserve your spot at the ranger station in the Lake Morena County Park. This event is for guests ages 12 and up and will be canceled if weather is stormy. For more information, call 619-579-4101 or visit countynewscenter.com/events.
Country music stars Daryl Hall and John Oates are teaming up with Train in Concert at the Viejas Arena on the San Diego State University campus. The concert is Saturday, August 4th at 7 p.m. For tickets, visit the Viejas Arena website or Ticketron.
Jazz vocalist Allison Adams Tucker will perform a concert at the Mission Trails Regional Park Theater on Sunday, August 4th from 3 to 4 p.m. Find more information at mtrp.org.
The Julian Natural Wonderfest on August 11th from 3 to 11 p.m. at Jess Martin Park and other venues in Julian will celebrate nature by night and day with music, art, and a star party. Shuttles will take visitors from downtown Julian to several key attractions. Start with a family-friendly hike along Santa Isabel Creek. Next, tour the Julian Wolf Center, and then go to Jess Martin Park to meet hawks and owls, hear presentations on preservation work by the Wolf Center, Vulcan Mountain Foundation, Julian Dark Sky Network, Wildlife Research Mountain Lion Project, and more. There will also be live music, fun and games, and as twilight falls, storytelling until the Milky Way and Perseid meteor shower make their appearances in the night sky, when you can take a cosmic tour through telescopes provided by amateur astronomers. For details on this fun public event, visit juliannaturalwonderfest.org.
The Price is Right is coming to Sequan's Live and Up Close Theater on August 10th and 11th. For tickets to the popular TV game show where contestants win prizes by guessing prices of various items, you can visit Sequan.com and click on the Events tab.
The annual Heart of Mount Helix event takes place on August 11th at the Mount Helix Park Amphitheater. Guests can enjoy tastes of foods from local restaurants, wines, and beers. Also enjoy artwork by local artists and an auction, all while watching the sunset and celebrating under the stars at one of East County's most dramatic venues. Proceeds benefit the Mount Helix Park and Amphitheater, which are funded entirely through donations. For tickets and details, visit mounthelixpark.org. That's mthelixpark.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The Ramona Country Fair offers 4 days of fun August 23rd through the 26th at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. The fair includes carnival rides, midway-style games, western shows, contests, vendors, food, and more. The Ramona Country Fair is organized by the Ramona Chamber of Commerce. You can find details at ramonachamber.com.
East County Magazine invites you to celebrate our 10th anniversary at East County Fest on August 25th at the beautiful Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center. The evening event will include tastings from top restaurants and wineries across East County, as well as live music, artists, artisans, authors, and stargazing. The festival runs from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. with the VIP reception at 5:30 p.m. Advance tickets are required for East County Fest, with proceeds benefiting East County Magazine's nonprofit news in the public interest and the East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. You can get your tickets at eastcountymagazine.org.
The annual Barona Powwow will be held August 31st through September 2nd at the Barona Sports Park on the Barona Reservation in Lakeside. Native American dancers and drummers from across the nation come to participate in competitions at the powwow, where you can also find a wide variety of Native American crafts, jewelry, and foods available for purchase. For more information, visit barona-nsn.gov and click on the 2018 powwow button at the top.
The Julian Grape Stomp Festa invites you to kick off your shoes and squish grapes beneath your feet at the 22nd annual event on September 1st from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Mangini Winery in Julian. Taste wines from multiple wineries as well as food and drinks from a variety of local establishments. There will also be live music, bocce ball, and dancing at this party to remember, as well as a VIP event complete with a pig roast. For tickets and more information, visit www.visitjulian.com.
The Saquon Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will host its annual powwow September 7th, 8th, and 9th at the powwow grounds in front of the Saquon Casino on the Saquon Reservation in unincorporated El Cajon. You can watch Native American dancers in full regalia compete for prizes and shop for handcrafted Native American jewelry and crafts. For tickets, you can visit the Saquon Powwow page on Facebook.
The Ramona Grape Stomp invites you to come participate in a grape stomping competition, taste local wines, bid on silent auction items, and shop at more than 40 local crafters and vendors. The Ramona Grape Stomp will be held on September 8th from 12 to 5 p.m. at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. For the juicy details, you can visit ramonagrapestomp.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the Crime Beat Report. The California Highway Patrol seeks public help to find the driver of a red or burgundy small SUV who reportedly backed up and killed a woman in her 30s early Friday morning, July 27th. According to the CHP, the woman got out of the vehicle and was walking west on the shoulder of Highway 94 near Steel Canyon Road in Spring Valley when the driver backed up and ran her over. The hit-and-run driver reportedly remained at the scene for several minutes and then fled in the red SUV heading north on Steel Canyon Road. The victim was taken to Sharp Memorial Hospital, where she was pronounced dead of serious injuries, says Officer Travis Garrow. The driver is described as an African-American man in his mid-30s, 5'7" to 5'8" tall, weighing 275 to 300 pounds, with short hair. He wore light-colored clothes and a sweatband around his head. If you have any information, please call the California Highway Patrol.
This is John Fistier with a Crime Beat report. Thieves left Santee Sportsplex in the dark last week, making off with about $200 worth of copper electrical wiring stolen out of power junction boxes. But the theft cost the complex around $8,000, forcing cancellation of 15 youth and adult baseball and soccer games, NBC7 reports. Lights, scoreboards, and other equipment were left inoperable, requiring major repairs. The facility is upgrading to install costlier, theft-resistant equipment. The theft comes soon after an earlier heist of copper wiring from Santana High School, also in Santee. According to the Sheriff's Department, the thieves have electrical skills. Flipping the wrong wires can be dangerous, and copper thieves elsewhere have been electrocuted, suffering burns and even death. If you have any information on the copper wire thefts in San Diego's East County, please call the Sheriff's Santee Substation.
Next up, we have a story from County News Service on living with coyotes, where a county representative interviews County Animal Services Director Dan D'Souza.
Coyotes. It seems every so often they claw themselves back into the media where they are portrayed as vicious predators. coyotes can cause problems in urban neighborhoods, but there is little evidence that they deserve to be vilified as dangerous beasts.
What they've learned is that backyards have cat food and dog food left out all the time. People's gardens have vegetables and fruit that have fallen to the ground. That is taking the coyotes, luring them from out of the canyons and their open spaces into our own backyards.
Of course, pet owners living close to open space need to take extra precautions.
If you want to keep your cat absolutely 100% safe, keep it indoors. If it's outdoors and it's running loose, there's a chance it can be eaten by a coyote. There's a chance it can be hit by a car. You know, keep them in the house and you know they're going to be safe.
If you have small dogs, don't leave them unattended in your backyard.
If you see coyotes jumping into people's yards, there's a very easy technique to prevent that, and it's called a coyote roller. Basically, you, on the top of your fence, you stretch a metal cable from post to post, and over that cable, you just put a small piece of PVC pipe. A coyote, when he jumps up, and they can clear a 5-foot fence pretty easily, a 6-foot fence, they're going to reach up and put their paws on the top of the fence. If that PVC rolls, the coyote cannot get traction and will fall back to the other side.
One way to keep them out of your community is a technique known as coyote hazing. Now, that doesn't mean breaking out your fraternity paddles. It simply means that you want to make the coyote feel unwelcome. Wave your hand, shout, whatever it takes to scare them off.
You want to make that animal afraid of people and afraid to come back into our communities. So if you see a coyote and you stomp and yell and scream at it and it turns and runs away 10 feet and stops and looks back at you, take a couple steps forward and scream and yell at it again. You need to make sure that coyote knows, I'm not welcome here. It's not safe for me to be here.
Los Penasquitos Canyon Preserve borders several housing developments. It spans nearly 4,000 acres and has more than 10 miles of trails. A supervising ranger here says he hasn't had one negative coyote incident in the 12 years he's been here.
When people see coyotes in the canyon, sometimes they get a little bit alarmed and they want to come and tell the ranger they saw a coyote down the road. I let them know that that's probably a wonderful thing that they saw, and they have to realize that they are in a wild area, in an open space preserve, and this is where coyotes are supposed to be. We ask for people to keep their dogs on a leash at all times. Some people don't like that, and they ask us why. Primarily, it's to keep their dogs safe. What will happen is, as they're running loose off a leash, whether they're large or small, they can easily be drawn away or attacked by a coyote that is simply an opportunistic hunter and sees this prey coming by.
When you see these people that have leashes that are 20 feet long, they can't protect that animal if there's a coyote in those bushes 20 feet ahead. That coyote will jump out and snatch that animal instantly.
So why not just trap and remove the coyotes living here? Some even ask about killing the animals to decrease the sheer numbers of coyotes. Well, those methods have been attempted across the country, and it just doesn't work.
Coyotes play an integral role in the ecosystem. If you get rid of a coyote, and that's what we always hear, can't you just kill this coyote? Can't you trap it and relocate it? Doing so means that prey population that that coyote has been living on, the rabbits and the mice and the rats, is going to explode. Nature has a way of balancing itself out. When those prey populations explode, that's going to actually draw in more coyotes into the community. So again, we need to learn to live with them, but keep them in the open spaces and in the canyons where they rightfully belong.
Coyotes are here to stay. It's up to us to find ways of coexisting with them. We need to accept and even enjoy that wildlife as part of our environment. When you hear the chorus of coyotes late at night, it's them telling us, humans and pets alike, that this is their home.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power Report. Sharp Grossmont Hospital held a ribbon-cutting ceremony on July 27th for its new Burr Heart and Vascular Center. The state-of-the-art facility is named in recognition of La Mesa residents and EDCO owners Ed and Sandy Burr, who donated $5 million toward the facility, the largest gift ever made to the hospital. Ed Burr says, "We believe in giving back to the community, where we have been fortunate to grow our business for many years." And he adds,
Sharp Grossbot has been there for us when we needed it, so it is our honor to support a cause that has such an impact on so many of us in East County. The Burhardt and Vascular Center at Sharp Grossbot Hospital is the only dedicated cardiovascular center in San Diego's East County. The 60,000-square-foot facility houses four new cardiac catheterization labs and four new operating rooms, which will expand capacity to enable surgeons and cardiologists to perform advanced procedures to treat complex heart diseases and conditions.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Now, if you would like to help survivors of the West Fire in Alpine, there will be a dinner and auction to benefit them on Saturday, August 18th from 5:30 to 9 p.m. at the Alpine Community Center. The Alpine Mountain Empire Chamber of Commerce and Alpine Community Center are organizing the fundraiser. All money raised will be donated to the Alpine Community Foundation to help and support those affected by the West Fire, which destroyed 34 homes and also destroyed many outbuildings, damaging other properties as well. For tickets and more information, you can visit alpinechamber.com.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, August 3rd, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Rick Gates back on deck to testify in the trial of former Trump campaign chief Paul Manafort. Also on the Friday rundown, critics call the Trump administration's clean car standard reversal unconscionable, a bold experiment to eliminate grade levels, and why many college students are going hungry. Now, our top story, after parading more of Paul Manafort's extravagant purchases, including lavish suits and M-shaped flower gardens, Axios reports the former Trump campaign chairman's bookkeeper testified she did not know of any offshore accounts and that financial documents Rick Gates sent to banks in 2015 showed the company making $4 million more than she had accounted for. The Washington Post reports Rick Gates seems more than likely to testify again. We have every intention to call him as a witness, one of the prosecutors told the judge. The Trump administration wants to roll back tougher fuel efficiency standards on cars and light trucks, Mary Sherman reports.
The EPA claims this new proposal to roll back the standards through 2026 means new vehicles would cost about $2,000 less. But other studies have reached opposite conclusions. Lisa Locke with Delaware Interfaith Power and Light says beyond reducing dangerous tailpipe emissions, the original standards were saving drivers money, spurring innovation, and creating jobs.
It's really beyond our understanding because from a very practical and scientific perspective, I mean, it's really indefensible. And from the moral perspective, it's unconscionable when you think about what the implications are.
The standards were expected to create 1,900 new jobs in Delaware by the year 2030. The administration also claims freezing the fuel standard will result in fewer highway deaths because it assumes people would drive less. But opponents contest these findings. Locke says it's disappointing for Delaware and about a dozen other states that now use the higher California standard.
And that is impacting like 113 million people. It's a third of the consumers.
Meantime, advocates for new cruise control technology for freight hauling trucks say it could save money on fuel and consumer costs. But opponents of the technology believe it could put others on the road in danger. The system would allow so-called platooning, the term for freight trucks tailing each other, using wireless connections to detect leading and following vehicles. Josh Witowski with the motorcyclist advocacy group A Brotherhood Aimed Toward Education, or ABATE, says there are a lot of issues with the potential change.
There are safety concerns with the way that it presents on the roads. There are reliability concerns.
A House bill in Illinois would have allowed use of the cruise control system, but it stalled in committee this spring. And legal professionals are in western South Dakota this weekend. Ross Brown tells us they're trying to locate and help about 100 people who have outstanding warrants for protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline nearly 2 years ago.
From late 2016 to early 2017, thousands of people protested the potential environmental impacts of the pipeline at a site in southern North Dakota, resulting in 761 arrests. Jess Fuller with the Water Protector Legal Collective says most of the people with outstanding warrants are from the Dakotas, California, and New York.
So it's like been this like long process over the last 2 years, just handling all the cases, making sure that everyone has an attorney, make sure that everybody knows about their court date, make sure that everybody doesn't even have a charge in the first place, but make sure that they have all the resources that are needed and available to them.
The Legal Collective is planning outreach events today and Saturday at the Powwow Grounds in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and on Sunday at the Powwow Grounds in Fort Yates, North Dakota.
Now to the rural North Dakota town of Hunter.
an experiment underway there that educators in the area believe could revolutionize the learning process. Here's Eric Tegedoff.
Northern Cass School District is entering its second year of making education more personalized so each student can move at their own pace. Superintendent Corey Steiner says the current model of placing students in grades based on their age assumes all those kids learn in the same way, a notion he says isn't backed up by research or personal experience.
What I don't like about that is it doesn't respect the individuality of a kid, and it also puts them in a box in terms of, well, you need to learn how to read as a third grader by the end of third grade, and if you don't, you're behind. Well, what if that student's able to do math at a fourth grade level? Then we'll hold you back and make you go slower.
The new self-paced model is scheduled to be fully implemented for kindergarten through 12th grade by the fall of 2020. Steiner says members of the district traveled to schools in California, Maine, and South Dakota for research on this experiment.
And finally, Linda Barr reports that many college students will be heading back to class later this month and juggling high college costs with low-wage jobs. There's growing concern, she says, nationwide, this group doesn't have enough to eat.
More than a third of college students face food insecurity this year, according to a survey of more than 40,000 students around the country. Another survey of Utah State University students found similar levels of hunger on that campus. Gina Cornea, with the group Utahns Against Hunger, says those numbers indicate a problem more serious than the old starving college student stereotype.
Between tuition and books and, you know, transportation and all of those things, that food budget becomes the thing that's the most flexible.
Utahns Against Hunger offers an online toolkit for college campuses looking to help students access healthy meals. It includes information on government food assistance and encourages establishing hunger-fighting advocacy programs on campus.
Barr tells us that work-study jobs on campus do count towards SNAP eligibility, and students who have young children may be eligible for additional benefits. Have a great weekend. I'm Mike Clifford. You've been newsing and cruising with Public News Service. We're member and listener supported, and we are online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The City of El Cajon Veterans Commission is seeking nominations for its Veteran of the Year Award, recognizing those who go above and beyond in serving their community through their leadership abilities and or community services in El Cajon. Final selections will be based on dedication, commitment, and the impact on those served by the veterans' volunteer work since leaving the military. Nominees must be residents in the City of El Cajon and honorably discharged from the U.S. military or National Guard. If you know of a veteran who has gone the extra mile to improve the quality of life in the community, please take this opportunity to acknowledge and reward that effort. Current Veterans Commissioners are not eligible. Nominations are being accepted now through September 14th, and nomination forms are available at the City of El Cajon's website on the Veterans Commission page. For more information, call 619-441-1754. Winners of the award will be honored on Veterans Day, November 11th, at the Veterans Memorial in front of City Hall. They will also be presented with a Veteran of the Year award plaque and proclamation during the El Cajon City Council meeting on December 11th. Additionally, a perpetual plaque will be displayed in the lobby at City Hall. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Eileen Bays.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. It's time to start planting for this fall, and that means you need your tools to be in good shape. So how exactly do we keep our tools in good shape? Well, for one thing, we don't leave them laying out in the rain, if it ever rains again. And we don't want to put them away dirty with mud on them and dirt on them. We want everything to be cleaned up and put in a proper place inside the garage, the basement, or a tool shed of some sort. One of the cute ideas that some of my students like is buying an old used mailbox at a garage sale and posting that someplace in their garden so they can have a second set of tools or even a third one out there to grab when they see something they need to do, and that way they don't have to go all the way back to the house to get the right tool, and it is out of the way.
Now, how do we clean these tools when we're through with them? Well, obviously, you can hose off your shovels, rakes, hose, things like that. I have a trick that I learned years ago that I really enjoy, and I think it's wonderful. And even my husband, who's not quite as hyper attuned to cleaning tools as I am, likes this one. We take an old cat litter box, and we fill it with sand, and pour a quart of motor oil into it, stir it up real well, and we can slide the shovels, the rakes, and everything into that box and get a light coating of oil on the tools before we hang them up. This also has the benefit of taking the small nicks and scrapes off the edges of the tools before you put it away. Sometimes we have wooden handle tools. I love wooden handle tools. They're much better than fiberglass as far as I'm concerned. How do you keep those wooden handles nice? That's the job for a little bit of sandpaper sometimes, and then coat them about once a year with boiled linseed oil. You can also use mineral oil. You can also use expensive olive oil. The point is, you're using an oil on these wooden handles at least once a year to keep them smooth and working well. When you are using your tools for pruning outside, your loppers, your hand pruners and everything, they have a tendency to get gummy. They get all sorts of sap on them. There's an expensive product out there that you can buy that'll remove that, but you can also remove it, the sap and the gumminess on the blades of your tools with alcohol, just plain rubbing alcohol on a rag, rub it onto the gicky stuff on the edge of the tools, and then leave it for 3 or 4 minutes. And then when you come back, you can use that same rag and just wipe them off totally clean. There is also a tiny tool out there. It costs about $10 or $12. Look for it, and you will find it. It is a gardening tool sharpener, which you run over the blades of your loppers and your hand pruners, your bypass tools, and it will clean them. And it will sharpen them again instantly. 3 passes and you're good. It is not the same as a knife sharpener, so don't buy a knife sharpener and think that's going to work. What other tools do we need to take care of? Well, you need to take care of your hands. So for that, I recommend you get some really good gloves. Gloves that are fabric that have a vinyl dipped fingers and hands and palms are absolutely great. They last longer than you think they will. Sometimes at one of the big box stores, you can buy a package of 6 or 8 pairs of these for about $1 a pair. They're worth their weight in gold. They'll keep your hands from feeling like, as my husband once said to me, holding hands with you is like holding hands with a pineapple. You can avoid that by wearing gloves when you do your gardening. And then I want to say a kind and loving word towards your favorite item that you need here where we water every week, and that is your garden hoses. Garden hoses should never be stowed with kinks in them. That destroys the hose in record time. Also, when the hoses are stretched out and you're using them, don't step on them. You may think that it's not going to do any harm, but it will, because small rocks can poke a hole in the side of your expensive garden hose, faster even in your cheaper garden hoses. So don't do that. Be kind to your garden hoses. Coil them up nicely with no kinks and put them away after each use.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.